going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hey, it's me, Paige DeSorbo, and I'm so excited to share my new shoe collection at DSW, filled with my favorite styles and trends for spring. Because if you know me, you know I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And by kind of obsessed, I mean head over heels. You're going to love these shoes. So snag super cute styles like cute flats, fun heels, and cool sneakers from the Paige DeSorbo collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nielsen, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome
to Utopia.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in. It is a post-draft edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. Great to be with you. My name is Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610, Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. excuse me, till 10 a.m. If my voice is a little scratchy, it's because it's draft weekend is over, and that's all I've been doing is talking draft for the last 3 days, whether it's on the air, on Texans radio, or with people about town. Everybody talks about the NFL draft. It's in the books. It's done. It's like Christmas. You anticipate it for weeks and weeks and months, and then it gets here, and poof, it's done. And then it's on to the next. So we'll talk about the Texans draft class, what it means, what was picked up, what wasn't picked up in this draft, their approach, how did I think about how they went about things in this draft. So we'll hit that. We'll hit Shedeur Sanders finally going in the fifth round of the draft on Saturday. I'm recording this for a little, chronological perspective at about 5:30 on Sunday. I just got back from the movie theater, went and saw Star Wars Episode III, Revenge of the Sith, in the theaters. I've seen it 8 jillion times before, but I haven't seen it in the theater since it came out in 2005. So that was kind of fun. Laying down the thoughts on the draft here for you, both with the Texans, non-Texans thoughts, and I'll get to the AFC South as well. I want to remind you to send in your emails about the draft at houmailbag@gmail.com. In case some of you missed the episode, my last episode that I did, talking about the Texans right after the first round was over, my mailbag episode, something happened with the audio for it and the mailbag from last week. So any questions that I hit in that mailbag that are not obsoleted by the draft, I will mix into a jumbo mailbag this week. So get your draft questions ready. Get your soon-to-be starting off-season questions ready. You can send them in at houmailbag@gmail.com. So let's get right into it here. This will be, I would guess this is going to end up being about a 20 or 25-minute episode when it's all said and done. Quick hitter on the draft this episode, and then, like I said, the mailbag episode will be giant-sized later this week. houmailbag@gmail.com. Overall, I'm fine with the Texans draft. I'm happy with it. It's no draft is ever perfect, I don't think. Especially when you're not picking at the tippy top of the draft. It's hard to get players that you feel like are just completely game changing for a team. If you listen to the previous episode of the podcast, I was totally fine with them trading out of the first round. If you had blindly told me before the draft that they were going to trade out of the first round down to the top of the second round without knowing how the draft had unfolded, I would have been fine with that. I'm good with them picking up extra picks. And before we get into the players themselves that got picked, and the thoughts on each of them. This is kind of the mode I think that they're going to be in over the next, well, the foreseeable future. They walk away with 9 players in a 7-round draft. So that's a surplus. They got more players than there were rounds. They had extra picks. And granted, a lot of them were 6s and 7s at the end of the draft. Nevertheless, you look at next year's draft and they've got an extra 2 and an extra 4. And they've got a bunch of, you know, they've got their own first. And who knows, it will not obviously not stay that way. With that, we know, like, Nick just trades and trades and trades. And we'll talk about that in just a little bit. But I do think they're going to start to operate in a way where they're coming away from each draft now with 9 or 10 players at least, because they are starting to enter into the expensive phase of their rebuild, or of their build, I guess. We don't really call it a rebuild anymore. They're a playoff team. But they've paid Derek Stingley Jr. They've paid Jalen Petrie. They extended Danielle Hunter. They've got other expensive guys on the roster. Nico Collins, the two most expensive guys moving forward, haven't even been paid yet. And that's Will Anderson Jr. and C.J. Stroud. So part of the dynamic of having players like that on the team is that you need the cheap labor to be good labor. And to make sure that you get enough good cheap labor, you need enough swings at the plate, because you're not going to get them all right. So I think that I really do think this is how they're going to be operating. We're going to see a lot of trades that accumulate picks. You know, I think that was the gist of that trade they made before the draft even started on Thursday, was to get some more picks. They ended up using a lot of that draft capital they got in that Cleveland trade in some shape, form, or fashion on Sunday or on Saturday. So I think this is – that's why I say, like, blindly, if someone had told me before the draft, like, hey, Nick's going to trade back, without telling me any of the players who'd been picked, and said, you can sign that, sign up for that, or you can look and see what's behind door number 2 and let it play out, I would have signed up for trading back, and I think the trade was fine. They picked up 2 extra thirds, and that's actually not a bad segue into the players themselves. If you look at it, the Texans at 25, moving back to 34, picked up – an extra third from the Giants, which was pick 99, and they picked up an extra third in 2026. If you look at the way the draft unfolded, they ended up using 34 and drafting Jaden Higgins. They end up – the 99th pick kind of got shuffled around, and eventually it winds up at 97, and that's the one they used to draft Jalen Smith. And then they traded one of their thirds next year back into this year's draft to draft Woody Marks, the running back out of USC, who John Harris loves. So if you look at it that way, and then the Giants obviously use that 25th overall pick to draft Jackson Dart. The way I would look at it, if I were a Texan fan, is would you rather have whoever they would have gotten at 25 there? Let's pretend it was Donovan Jackson. Let's pretend that Donovan Jackson was there available at 25. He wasn't. He got picked at 24, which I think is why they traded. But if you ask me, who would you rather have, Donovan Jackson or Jaden Higgins, Jalen Smith, and Woody Marks? I'd rather have that second package of players. You know, I think Jaden Higgins can be a difference maker. I think Woody Marks can be a difference maker. They're not offensive linemen, and so the protection for C.J. Stroud is still a question, but these are weapons for C.J. Stroud. I think that was the other – I think the lack of weapons for C.J. Stroud going into this draft was just as big an issue as finding offensive linemen, honestly. So they didn't fully solve both issues. They only drafted one offensive lineman, Tay Ursary, in the second round. We'll talk about him in just a second. But that's kind of how I look at that trade now. That trade out of the first round is that it's whoever they would have taken at 25 versus having three players that I think are going to be contributors for this team. I think Higgins is going to start on the other side opposite Nico Collins. I think Woody Marks is going to have a role on the team. Obviously, Joe Mixon is your bell cow, but I think Marks has a good chance of having a role as a third down back. They don't have a real third down back on this team. Dario Gumbawale is not a real third down back. Like somebody with some juice. And then Jalen Smith is, I think, at least going to get on the field on special teams. I actually ran into Frank Ross in the building on Saturday before the draft show, walking down to the media room down there. He was over the moon about – this is after day 2. He was super stoked about Jalen Knoll and Jalen Smith and their potential contributions on special teams. Noel is a returner. Smith is a guy who can run down and cover on special teams. So I think that can't be ignored. But that's kind of how I look at the trade. That's how, you know, we can literally attach names to those picks now. Even the third round pick in 2026, I don't know that they trade back into the fourth round if they don't have that extra pick. So I was cool with day one. That's a long way of me saying I was cool with what they did on day one. Now let's get into the actual guys they picked. Jaden Higgins, big Nico Collins comp with him. Christian Kirk is obviously going to hold it down in the slot. But you got two big, strong, physical wide receivers on the outside who also have an explosive element to their game. They can get downfield. They're not burners, but they can get deep. I think it's awesome. I really do. So Jaden Higgins, I was cool with that. It seemed like 34th overall was a little high for him compared to where a lot of people had him. Whatever. They liked him. The Texans liked him. It would stand to reason that that was maybe the one player that Nick Caserio talked about on Thursday night. He was asked by Jonathan Alexander of the Chronicle, when you traded out of 25, were there any guys you were thinking heavily of taking right there instead of trading? And Nick said, yeah, there was one. He didn't say who it was, obviously. But I think it's fair to assume that it was probably Jaden Higgins. And he looked at it and said, I like this guy. I think I can get him at 34 if I move back. And that was the right move. So there's that. And I think it's also worth mentioning, I saw this, that as soon as the Higgins pick was made, the Titans and the Raiders both traded out of their spots is what I thought I saw. So Higgins, I like that. Ursary, I like that pick. Todd McShay thinks that Ursary is going to be one of the three best offensive linemen in this draft. 4 or 5 years from now, in 2029, he said, when we're talking about this draft, Ariante Ursary is going to be thought to be one of the three best offensive linemen in this draft. I guess the question would be with him is, where does he fit in? John Harris said on the draft show on Saturday that he could see Ursary maybe getting on the field at right guard to start off with, because he thinks that it'll be Cam Robinson on the left side and Blake Fisher on the right side, with Titus Howard playing left guard. And then center is a competition between Scruggs and Patterson. He thinks Ursary can get on the field as a right guard. He is a massive dude. He's over 330 pounds, and he's a really good athlete. He graded in the tippy top percentile in that in the RAS score, that athleticism score that they have. Both he and Higgins were elite in many of the physical traits for their position. So that's good news. I don't know that the Texans are a team where that typically matters to them. I mean, obviously, you want athletic guys. But we saw them draft Kamari Lassiter last year, who ran a 4.6 5.40, but his film said he could play football, and that's all they cared about. So Ursary, I guess the big concern would be Ursary being the only offensive lineman that they took in this draft. Would have been really interesting to see if Donovan Jackson had made it to 25. You know, would they have gone Donovan Jackson at 25 and then with the 58th pick, which Ursary turned into the 48th pick. They actually traded up to get Ursary. Most of the picks they used were not their picks going into that night. Nick moved around on a lot of these. No GM moves around more than Nick Caserio in the draft. So that would have been interesting to see. You know, if they've come away with multiple offensive linemen in days one and two of the draft, do people feel differently? For what it's worth, they're getting pretty good grades, the Texans are, on this draft. I saw Kuiper gave them a B+. I've seen mostly in that B+ range. There's nobody that's over the moon about their draft, and that's a function of not picking in the first round. Oftentimes, the teams that get A's and A+'s are teams that have a bunch of premium picks that got players that have name brand appeal. The Texans draft is not really about that. So you got Ursary in the second round, Higgins at the top of the second round, Ursary at 48. I love the Jalen Noel pick. I love that they just kept going with wide receivers. I think it's really interesting that Higgins' comp is Nico Collins, and Noel plays more like Christian Kirk or maybe even Tank Dell. I think the interesting thing about the Noel pick, if we're looking to kind of read the tea leaves, that tells me if this Noel pick works out, Christian Kirk is probably – well, let me back up. This Noel pick tells me that they are probably – not that we didn't already know this, but this is maybe confirmation that they're not counting on Tank Dell this year. You got Christian Kirk in the slot. You got Noel, who's a slot built – I mean, you look at his highlights. He looks – there's a lot of tank-type qualities to Jalen Noel. So I think first and foremost, that tells me that they ain't counting on Tank this year. Not that we thought they would be, but this is sort of confirmation of that. I think secondly, if the Jalen Nowell pick works out, then Christian Kirk is probably a one and done here in Houston. He'll play this 1 year under a $16 million deal. And then if Nowell shows enough as a rookie, there's your slot guy for the next 3 years at least with C.J. Stroud. So happy for C.J. Stroud. So those first three picks, you know, if I'm C.J. Stroud after that Nowell pick, I'm looking up at what the Texans are doing and I'm going, okay, you know, this is good. Two potentially high-level weapons, high-level, you know, good rookies. You know, both if Higgins and Nowell are – if as rookies they're like Tank Dell-level rookies, those are home runs right there. And then Ursary along the offensive line, I think, if you're C.J. Stroud, you feel good about that too. Now, the thing here, the big question here is this is it, right? Like if barring a trade – and I'm not counting any scrap heap guys they bring in here that are still on the street. If there's a free agent still on the street, then it's not somebody who moves the needle on the offensive line. It's just a body at this point. Could there be a trade? You know, some of this extra draft capital? Yeah, I don't think before the season starts. Or, I'm sorry, before training camp starts. And I think it would have to be a real disaster in training camp for them to trade draft capital to go get an offensive lineman. So I say all that to say I think this is the group they're going to roll with along the offensive line. So it's going to be the number of permutations it could be, because there is nobody who's above the competition. There's nobody that's like Laremy Tunsil last year. And even Titus Howard, if he doesn't come in shape, like he didn't come in shape last year and he didn't play well at times. Titus is probably the closest thing to a sacred cow. That was not a fat joke, by the way, me calling him. It's just a saying. Sacred lion, sacred cheetah. Okay, fine. I'll do some animals that are in.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today. It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth-shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Shape. But I think Titus is the closest one to where he's going to start somewhere on the offensive line, and the next closest one is probably Cam Robinson. Follow the money. Find the highest-paid guys. Those are the guys that are most likely to have pretty secure jobs on the offensive line. I bet a lot of money Cam Robinson's going to be the left tackle. I bet a lot of money that Titus Howard is either going to be right tackle or left guard. And then after that, I think everything's wide open. And the fact that you've got Juice Scruggs, who's a center and a guard, Jarrett Patterson, who's a guard and a center, you got Lakin Tomlinson and Ed Ingram, both guards, I think, you know, that can flip around and play either left or right. Blake Fisher's solely a tackle, but he can play left or right tackle. Ursary sounds like, at least I'm going by what John Harris says, can play guard or tackle. So there's a lot of moving parts along the offensive line, but and I don't feel great about where they are. You know, it's I don't think they, you know, you don't rip all those guys out of there and then bring in this group of guys and go, okay, it's fixed. Poof. A lot of it will depend on coaching. How good a a coach is Nick Caley, how good a coach is Cole Popovich, how much of the issues last year were Bobby Slowick and Chris Strauser, and the vibe in the room, you know, that you know, the interviews I listened to with Ursary and all the stuff you hear about him, he's more along the lines of the personality type I think they're looking for in that room. So that'll be interesting to see play out. Because I can tell you this, at training camp last year, the defense dominated the offense. And you could tell right out of the chute the first week of training camp that there were going to be issues on the offensive line. So hopefully that's not the case this year. The defense is typically ahead of the offense anyways early in camp. But at least I hope there's some fight. Hell, if these guys practice, that's ahead of what Laramie Tunsil was doing in training camp last year. So there's that. Then the last pick of day two, which was really day one for the Texans in terms of picking guys, at least, was Jalen Smith, the cornerback out of USC, who it sounds like was overdrafted, maybe, according to the experts, at least. I saw some folks out there saying they had a late day three grade on him. And the Texans pick him in the third round, trade up to pick him in the third round. I think two things there. One, Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans have done a pretty good job scouting defensive backs, so I'll give them the benefit of the doubt on this one. Number two is you get a special teams element with Jalen Smith, and we don't know what the intel was that they had that led them to trading up. You know, it's one thing to draft a guy in the third round who people think are going in the sixth. It's another thing to give up extra draft capital to move up and get a guy whose grades by other people. Now, the Texans may have had a third round grade on him, you know, and so they were just going by their board. I mean, obviously they had a grade on him where they thought he was worth drafting there. I'm not going to get too caught up in overdrafting. He's a cornerback at USC, so he's obviously got some chops. We'll see what happens with that. And then as far as day three goes, we'll rapid fire this one real quick here. Woody Marks, third down back. Love that they drafted a running back. Love that they got somebody who will have a role that can get him on the field early. So that's good. John Harris, loved that pick. John Harris stood up. For those who don't know, I was doing day three of the draft on the radio with John Harris at the stadium yesterday on Texans radio. And when Woody Marks got picked, Johnny stood up and smacked the table like three times. I've never seen him do that before. I've seen him get excited about picks before, but I've never felt like I needed to leave the room so he could have a moment to himself. I didn't do that, but I thought maybe I should. He was very excited about that pick of Woody Marks, third down back. I love them bringing in a running back there. The running back room, we love Damian Pierce, but it can't be where your backup running back is somebody that just is not trusted to get on the field for more than one or two touches a game. Sorry. And they seem to have recognized that. Jalen Reed in the sixth round. I liked Jalen Reed around combine time. I liked some of the stuff I was hearing out of him from the combine that he really liked the Texans. He had meetings with the Texans. Watched some of his film. I like his film. It's a safety. You know, you get in the sixth and seventh round, and I'm not worried about what positions they are. That is truly best player available type stuff. So I like that pick. He loves the Texans. I don't get the Graham Mertz pick, them drafting a quarterback there in the sixth round, other than maybe go with the old, hey, they drafted Tom Brady in the sixth round. I promise you that won't be my take on the radio tomorrow. I'm not a huge Graham Mertz fan, and it's probably because he cost me money at some point in a college football game. They seem to like him. Again, this is another one where they traded up to get him. There's two guys in this draft that they traded up to get that it would feel like to me you don't have to trade up to get them. But again, I will defer to whatever intel they had, they being Nick Caserio and his staff, that they would have needed to move up. I have a hard time believing that Graham Mertz was a hot name there, but whatever. So that felt like burning a pick to me. Now that said, Davis Mills is probably going to walk after this year, and you can't pay high level backup QB money. So I'm talking myself into taking a quarterback there. I would have just said, fuck it, and taking Quinn Ewers right there in the sixth round. He didn't go to the seventh round. But they like something about Mertz. He's probably a little more of an athlete than Ewers is. You know, Ewers is just an arm guy. But that was a curious pick to me. Devontae Hamilton, lineman out of Rutgers, don't have a strong take on him. These are seventh rounders now. I will say this, Rutgers feels like a program that Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans kind of give an extra half a point to their prospects having played for Greg Schiano. So that made a lot of sense. And similarly, the Lachey pick, the kid out of Iowa, the tight end. They're going to draft a tight end from somewhere and take a flyer in the seventh round. Iowa is a pretty good place to take a flyer from. So I'm fine with that. You know, these are seventh round picks. Those picks make sense in terms of position, the programs they come from. In listening to the interviews with both of those young men, you can hear why they like them so much. So there's that. As far as other themes coming out of the draft, look, Shedeur Sanders was a huge story, obviously, all week long. I watched ESPN's coverage of the draft. So I got all Shedeur all the time from Mel Kiper and Louis Riddick. And I have to tell you, this was one of the most enjoyable draft weekends for me. Not that Shedeur fell to the fifth round. Like I'm shocked. Don't get me wrong. And I have not been a fan, going all the way back to the combine, of the way that Shedeur handled his business with some of his quotes, with some of Deion's quotes. I've been banging on that. And the people, I think it's interesting. There are obviously a lot of people that disagreed with that take. Like, oh, it's no big deal. He's just confident. And I thought to myself, no, you have not watched the way NFL teams evaluate guys, especially at that position. So I did feel validated in terms of some of my opinions before the draft that Shedeur slipped as far as he did. So that part was, it is what it is. Like, that he lands in Cleveland, who just drafted Dylan Gabriel. Like, to me, you can look at it one of two ways. He could not have been drafted into a better situation if he's trying to start day one as a fifth round pick than Cleveland, although it's a crowded quarterback room. The flip side is you could not have landed with a more dysfunctional, just train wreck of a franchise. It's going to be fascinating to watch play out, no doubt about it. So there's that part. The Mel Kiper Jr. and Louis Riddick part of this, where they were just, you know, they've been white knighting for Shedeur a lot leading up to the draft, and that they were just so taken aback that he slipped like that and just really almost insulted, I found hilarious. Like, a lot of you are like, just stop showing Mel Kiper. I'm like, no, I like watching him suffer. Keep showing him. I want to watch him look like an old man shaking his fist at a Shedeur-shaped cloud. Really, I guess it would be an NFL front office shaped cloud. That's who he's mad at. He's mad because you're mad at the cloud. I think my overriding take on the whole Shedeur thing, independent of all the ESPN talking heads that loved him, independent of whatever my opinion was leading into the draft, independent of whatever joy people felt watching him sit there after not just day one, but day two as well, I thought there was a chance he might slip out of the draft altogether. Because you start to reach that point where you're like, well, look, if you weren't going to take him for these reasons in the fourth round, then why take him in the, you know, you're not going to take him in the seventh round. But Cleveland took him in the fifth after taking another quarterback in the third. Thank you, Browns. Thank you, Browns. What Hannah McNair says, thank you, Browns. Thank you, Browns, for the content. But my biggest takeaway from the Shedeur thing is, ironically, the guy who thought he had Shedeur's best interests at hand, the guy who has been with Shedeur every snap of his football career, the guy who should know better because he was an NFL Hall of Famer who has contacts throughout the league, who should have known that whatever this act was Shedeur was putting on out there to try to manipulate, if his goal was to tank these interviews, to manipulate the draft somehow, or if Shedeur just wasn't that good at interviews, he's just that cocky and that much of an asshole, then his dad failed him. Shedeur failed himself, no question. He's 23 years old. He's going to have to live with that. He seems to be living fine with it. He was dancing his ass off when he got drafted yesterday, so good for him. But Deion Sanders failed his son in a big, big way. And that's the irony of this whole thing. He's his college coach. He's his dad. And nobody could have steered this ship worse than Deion Sanders did. Shedeur falling to the fifth round is as much a referendum on Deion Sanders as it is Shedeur Sanders. Whether it's Deion putting whatever the guardrails were for Shedeur, or at least, or maybe even eliminating guardrails for him through the draft process, and or the specter of Deion, the dark cloud over whatever team drafts him, and teams just saying, I don't want to be in the Deion Sanders business. He failed his son, without question. All right, so there you go. Those are the two big things I wanted to hit, Texans draft and Shedeur Sanders, and we'll talk about it a lot on Sports Radio 610 throughout the day on Monday. Not just our show, Payne and Pendergast, but In the Loop with Reggie Atitula and John Lopez, and then The Drive with Clint Sterner and Ron Hughley. We're all over it. Whether you're listening to this, I think this is going to go up Monday morning. So whether you're listening to this podcast today or, you know, anytime on Monday, or maybe if it goes up Sunday night, maybe you're listening tonight before you go to bed. A lot of people do that. They take my podcast to bed with them and just fall asleep. It's like a lullaby. Me ranting about Shedeur Sanders and what a horrible job his dad did steering his draft journey. People love that. It just go right to sleep, man. It's a sweet little lullaby. All right, so I'm done. Big jumbo mailbag again this week, HOUmailbag@gmail.com. Send in your emails. Do it now while you're thinking about it. Draft emails, anything Texans, really anything Houston related, you can send in to the mailbag. Subscribe, rate, and review the podcast as well, so you get it automatically. Big thanks to Jared Rowland, my producer, for getting this podcast out to all of you. Big thanks to all of you for listening. This has been the Utopia Football Podcast. We will see you mailbag style later this week. Have a good rest of the weekend and have a great weekend, everybody.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, drill deep to left.
Ohtani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Podcasting isn't just evolving, it's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colone for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.